So I agreed to give this talk given that Steve Linkenfelter couldn't be here. And actually what I'm going to talk about is a little bit of a change of pace for what others have been talking about. I'm going to talk about who's living inside Cerambycid guts and what they're doing there. And most of this work was done by my graduate student Scott Geib, who's now a postdoc. So as we know, these beetles live on wood. So what is wood composed of? It's mostly cellulose, hemicellulose, and lignin. And as we know, cellulose is probably the most abundant carbon source on Earth. And wood is very limiting for these beetles with respect to free sugars and nitrogen. So how are they growing there? One of the other things that they have to live on here is cellulose. And we know that that is a chain of glucose units. And they're linear strands, but they're more complicated than that, because in wood they have hydrogen bonding where they create these cross linkages that form a crystalline structure. So to be able to break this down to get to the free sugars, an insect has to have a complex of three different types of cellulases to get at glucose monomers. So in cellulose degradation, just to remind us about this, there are three different groups of enzymes. There are the exogluconases, which clip off two subunits, so they make a cellobiose. There are endogluconases that clip in the middle. And then there are the beta-glucosidases that then can cleave the cellobiose units into individual glucose units. And I'm going to talk about some enzyme assays where we are assaying for exogluconase activity using carboxymethyl cellulose, or CMC. This is commonly what's done. Endogluconase is using avicel, which is basically kind of like just like a wheat germ, almost cellulose. And then salicin for looking at beta-glucosidase activity. So some wood-feeding insects can ingest fungal enzymes or eat pre-degraded wood to be able to get at cellulose and nitrogen in the wood. And Mike Martin's group has published several papers back in the 80s where they looked at how many different types of cerambycids, from lower cerambycids and even up to some of the higher cerambycids, can ingest fungal enzymes and permit them to obtain a complete cellulose complex, and they could break down like filter paper. And of course, leafcutter ants and termites have been cultivating fungal combs for millions of years as a way to get at cellulose. So, but what about an insect like the Asian longhorn beetle, Anaplophora glabropennis, that is a wood-feeding beetle that lives on the inner wood of a healthy tree and can actually develop in heartwood? How is it doing that? This tree is not infected with fungi. So we began to explore who's living in the gut and what are they doing. So the adults feed on twigs and leaves, but the larvae are feeding in sapwood and heartwood, and they're also able to use a broad host range of trees. So how do they do this? So we began to ask some questions about who lives there. Does the gut community structure change when the beetle feeds in different trees, because it does have a broad host range? And are these changes related to gut cellulase activities? So the first thing we did was a gut community analysis where we took a look at who's living in the gut when it feeds in a preferred host like sugar maple, a secondary host. It can grow and develop in pin oak, although it hasn't been found infesting oak trees here in the U.S. We have been able to rear beetles all the way out to adult in pin oak. Also, calorie pear trees, we did a screening to see if it would attack that tree. They will lay eggs in it, but the larvae only grow for a short time and then they end up dying. And when females feed on the twigs of these trees, as you know, many cerambycids have to maturation feed to develop an egg load. She'll never develop her eggs. They look like they're starving to death. And we couldn't figure out why. So I'm going to show you why we think that's happening. And then we have an artificial diet that we can rear these insects in that contains some antimicrobial compounds. So how is the community affected by host tree and diet? Well, what Scott did was he had insects lay eggs in, we have a quarantine facility, by the way, to do this. We have a quarantine greenhouse. And the females would oviposit in the tree, and we would allow the larvae to develop for several months in the tree. And then once they've entered the deeper sapwood or heartwood, we will pull them out of the tree, remove the gut and aseptically dissect it out, extract total genomic DNA from these gut samples, and then amplify the 16S region to look at what bacteria live there. So we clone these into a PCR product, into a plasmid, and then these were sequenced by looking at a random subset of clones, and then we would blast it, if you will, using the ribosomal database project. The reason we use that instead of just blast is because that tends to be more, that's where you're going to find all the 16S bacteria. And when Scott did this analysis, he analyzed over 500 clones and found several unique taxa. And these are defined as operational taxonomic units, or OTUs. And though a taxa is defined as being different from another if it's got at least a 3% difference in sequence. So he identified 35 different taxa that were broadly diverse over many classes, and many of these match to bacteria that had known cellulose degrading, or xylan, which is a hemicellulose, or aromatic degrading bacteria, which could be involved in lignin degradation. And what was really cool was when he looked at the microbial diversity, you can see here that the diversity index, the higher the number, the more diverse the sample. And when they fed in their preferred host, they had the greatest diversity of gut bacteria. In the secondary host, which was pin oak, it was the next. Artificial diet, where their antimicrobial compounds actually had a little bit more gut diversity than did cal repair. Now, cal repair is the host, as I mentioned, that the beetle does not do well in. It dies when it feeds in this tree. And what's interesting about cal repair is it has a unique phenolic glycoside called calreanin that may be toxic to the beetle. And this is a little bit busy, but if you just pay attention to the following, we're looking at different bacterial classes along here. So these are each different types of taxa in sugar maple fed, pin oak, cal repair, or artificial diet. And what we're going to look at are comparisons. So for aromatic and cellulose degrading bacteria, you can see that in the preferred host, sugar maple, we've got the most of those diversity of those types of bacteria, followed by pin oak, and almost nothing in cal repair, and absolutely nothing in artificial diet. We also found some bacteria that can fix nitrogen, and again, most of those were in the preferred host trees that can ferment carbohydrates. Interestingly, we found a lot of lactobacillus, but that seems to be an artifact of feeding an artificial diet because we never find it in tree-fed larvae. And then also some bacteria that are known to degrade hemicellulose. And again, if you look at sugar maple and pin oak, they have the most in common with respect to their bacterial taxa, followed by very few different taxa in the cal repair and artificial diet. So it does indeed appear that the gut community is dramatically influenced by the tree that it's feeding in, and that in suitable hosts, there was a great deal more bacterial diversity than in resistant hosts. And it may be that in feeding in a resistant host, the microbes that are needed to provide wood degrading enzymes are not there. So that was the next question that we asked, that microbiota may be providing some essential enzymes for wood digestion. And these, again, are the three enzymes I mentioned that you need to be able to completely degrade crystalline cellulose down to glucose subunits. So what Scott did was he reared larvae in trees again, extracted them from the tree, dissected out the gut, and then combined gut extract with cellulose substrates. And again, we looked at using different substrates to look at different enzyme activities. And then you can determine the amount of reducing sugar that's liberated through these assays. And what you're seeing here is the blue is sugar maple, yellow is pin oak, and cal repair is the striped one. And endogluconase activity was significantly higher in the sugar maple and pin oak compared to cal repair. The same pattern held for the other two types of enzymes. And what's interesting about this is you can see that there's virtually almost no cellulase activity in these beetles. So they have very few bacteria and not much cellulase activity. So in conclusions, the gut of the larval ALB are producing this complete cellulose complex. So we do know that they can produce the entire complex. The host tree is affecting cellulase activities. We had the highest enzyme activities in preferred hosts, where it was greatly reduced in the resistant host. And this correlated with gut microbial community diversity. And we believe these microbial species are likely quite critical for wood degradation. And another thing that Scott found, and this was just a few days ago, is he fed these larvae in cottonwood trees, pulled out the gut, pulled out the food bolus with the paratrophic matrix around it, and put this under the microscope. And you see all these little specks here. Well, when you blow that up on a compound microscope, these are fungi. And there is a fungus that we sequence out of the gut every single time we pull a beetle out of a tree, whether the tree came from the endemic population that we now have in New York, or from our own trees in our greenhouse. And it's sequenced as Fusarium solani. It's a unique taxa within that huge complex, and it appears to have established itself as a gut symbiont in this beetle. And what's interesting is it's a filamentous fungus, so it's different than brown rot fungi or white rot fungi. It's more like a soft rot. We don't know as much about how it degrades lignin, but it can. And it almost looks like when you blow this up, that this is a cell that it's got a little, almost like a root sitting in the cell or between cells, and then it's sticking its little mycelia out into the gut lumen. So this is probably going to turn out to be a very important organism for this beetle. There was a report also out of Ken Raffa's lab of a related Fusarium species found in, was it aspen borer? I think it was aspen borer, but I'm not sure. It was another longhorn beetle. But they were mostly looking at bacteria, so they didn't really pay that much attention to it. But I think this is going to turn out to be quite important. And just to let you know, there are lots of things we're going to be doing on this project. We are, obviously, you can imagine that the biofuels industry is interested in this. And Scott just published a paper in PNAS last month showing that the Asian longhorn beetle gut can, in fact, degrade core lignin, which had never been shown before for any insect, including termites. So this is a pretty cool thing. This little beetle gut is a little biorefinery, if you will. And it's figured out how to do everything we want cellulosic ethanol to do. We're also sequencing the metagenome of the entire gut community through a project with the Department of Energy Joint Genome Institute. And we've been sequencing all of the transcripts that are being generated in the gut. So what types of enzymes are being expressed? What can we learn from that? And we're also looking at what proteins are there, trying to figure out, we have a lot of unknowns. So we have a lot of proteins and transcripts and organisms that we have no idea what they are, because when we try to compare them to what's already in databases, there's no information. So this is a whole new area. We need more people to work on this kind of stuff so we can compare each other's data to each other and figure out what we have. So with that, I just want to thank my lab and my collaborators and our funding sources, and thank you for your attention. Do I have time for a question? Anybody have any questions? Yes. Any idea how what's being transferred?
How they're
being transferred. Well, Scott has a paper that we're about to submit showing that some of the bacteria are vertically transmitted from the mother. When she lays her eggs, she puts them right underneath, she chews into the bark, you know, to the cambium, turns around, ovoposits, and then she smears something on top of the egg. And that is where we're finding the same bacteria in the oviposition site we find in the eggs and then in the larvae. So some of them are vertically transmitted. How the fungus is getting there and staying there, you know, through generations, that's the bigger question. We don't know how that's happening, but we'd like to find out. Anything else? You have another question.
Real quick, have you looked at the frass to see if anything's coming out of the frass?
Yes, that's how we discovered they were degrading lignin. We compared the structure of the lignin molecule in the frass to the wood. So it was wood coming in, frass coming out. What's happened to the wood? And in terms of what microbes are there, I'm sure that a lot of them are there. But I don't know that, Scott, have you ever looked at them in the frass?
We haven't done that.
Okay. All right, thank you. All right.